Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and today I'm talking with Jack Bazalgette, the new artistic director of the Cheltenham Music Festival. We're talking on a Zoom call from the U.S. and London, and Accelerando listeners might learn a bit of geography today, because the Cheltenham Music Festival is in Britain. Cheltenham is a Regency village in the Cotswolds of Britain. If you've never been to the Cotswolds or a Regency village, Cheltenham is a popular destination for holidays because of its charming architecture and its seasonal festivals. Cheltenham has hosted a prominent music festival since 1945. It lays claim to commissioning and premiering works by composers of international stature. In its first season, Benjamin Britten conducted his own work, as well as the Elgar Enigma Variations. This year marks the 80th season, and the classical portion of the festival takes place during the first 2 weeks in July. Jack Bazalgette is taking the helm this year, and on the show today he talks about his knack for attracting audiences to classical music concerts all over Europe, and how he plans to do it for the Cheltenham Music Festival. Thanks for coming on the show.
Very exciting.
I've never been to Cheltenham. Sure. I know it's in the Cotswolds area. It's considered the gateway to the Cotswolds if you're coming from the west. And it's a lovely town called a Regency village.
Yeah, it's a very special place, and there are only a few towns like it in the UK. It's a really special town, partly because of its amazing kind of Regency architecture. It's kind of Georgian buildings everywhere that look like big wedding cakes. So big white grand buildings everywhere, which is quite unusual in the UK to have everything look like that. And all the streets kind of match. And so it's got this sort of unreal kind of holiday atmosphere to it. And it's sort of designed as a spa town where people would go, you know, on their holidays from London and that kind of thing. So it takes about 2 hours, 2.5 hours to drive there from London or get the train. And it's in Gloucestershire, which is a beautiful area of the UK, slightly towards Wales, in sort of centre west. And the town has always been famous for culture and for sort of forward-looking art. Many, many famous composers, including Holst and Vaughan Williams, people like that, spent time there.
Yeah, it has social life revolving around their celebrations, and the festivals are one of the hallmarks of the town. And the music festival, of course, you know, having been there for 80 years, is a big draw for people coming on holiday, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the history of it is that at the end of the Second World War, a group of music lovers led by a man who was working for the tourist board of Cheltenham decided that the best way to kind of lead the town out of the war and into peacetime would be to start a big music festival. And there's this kind of visionary group of local music lovers who started this thing, and they were actually planning it during the war and launched the first ever festival only 3 weeks after peacetime in Europe. So they were quite kind of forward looking.
Yeah, they were trying to revive the cultural life after World War II, and that's a great idea. You know, I was thinking, Jack, how you said in one interview that after the COVID shutdown, you know, you're trying to revive cultural life again. It's taking on the same role now.
Originally, yeah, maybe there's a bit of a parallel there, isn't there? The way everyone's had to rebuild, and in a way has kind of fallen back in love with gathering together to experience live culture. I can only imagine it's sort of similar to how they must have felt back in 1945 when they were so excited about kind of getting all this music back and kind of bringing it to all the venues in town.
You were brought on this year as the artistic director of Cheltenham because you've already established yourself as a very forward-thinking entrepreneur and curator in contemporary classical music. So what is your plan to revive it, to bring it back at least to where it was, or do you think that that's not going to be a problem?
Oh, well, I think it's not going to be easy, but I think it's definitely possible, and we're well on the way already. My background is running an organisation called Through the Noise, and we put on concerts all around the UK and a bit in Europe too, always classical or connected to classical music at least, ranging from, you know, sort of Beethoven string quartets to pieces by Reich and that sort of thing for all sorts of different ensembles. And we've always promoted them in gig venues, so venues where people tend to stand mostly, or at least there's cabaret seating, and you know, you have your drinks there and it's quite casual. But then the music is always taken very seriously and people listen really carefully. So it's this sort of, I've always liked putting on these events which counterpoint the kind of seriousness of the listening and the music with a quite relaxed atmosphere in every other way.
So I was wondering, are you planning on adding a few events at Cheltenham that have a more casual atmosphere? I mean, 80 years of tradition. Are you going to imprint a new strategy on a festival that's been bringing classical music to the Cotswolds region in a very specific manner? Or do they already employ these cabaret-like venues? Or is that something you plan to implement?
So yeah, I'm just trying to bring a bit of that to Cheltenham, but Cheltenham's always been forward-looking, so I can't be going around claiming to be bringing kind of innovation to Cheltenham when they've been doing it for so long. I mean, right from the beginning they've been doing interesting commissions and conceptual stuff and welcoming kind of the world's great composers to kind of do bonkers stuff as part of the festival. So
Well, I think that actually maybe you're downplaying it a little bit. Your project Through the Noise, or TTN it's often called, mm-hmm. is known for breaking down the barriers and making classical music accessible and bringing in big crowds at the same time. It sounds like every classical arts organization's dream. I think a lot of people would love to hear how you do it. And I love the part where you say the venues plays a really important part.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many different elements to how you get there. I mean, it started as an idea in lockdown in London. There were a few kind of grassroots venues starting to put on classical music, partly just to fill the gap that was left by the big organisations like the South Bank Centre and the Barbican, who had both, as massive organisations, it took naturally a bit of time for them to start putting on concerts again. And so suddenly a sort of chamber music scene emerged in cafes and small venues, and independent concert presenters started doing it with their own style and bringing all this different personality to the thing, and it was such an exciting time. But that quickly became sort of faded out as people became busy and moved back to the kind of more normal way of doing things. And we've kind of maintained that a bit, that spirit of kind of grassroots classical music that sort of anyone can go and try out for. It's quite cheap tickets, informal vibe, but always kind of top quality musicians. And that, paired with a lot of marketing and kind of sort of shouting about it, we've managed to create a kind of ecosystem where thousands of people come to see chamber music and classical soloists in these sort of more mainstream type venues all year round.
Thousands, that's really wonderful. You're seeing really big crowds. So are they bigger because re-emerging from the pandemic?
Well, I think, you know, I talk about the pandemic in the context of how it started a bit, but I mean, really, I'd say that we're now well and truly in an era that's past that. You know, obviously the marks of it will always be there in the cultural sector, but I think it's not something in a way that I think about anymore, which is quite nice. And I think the audiences come to the concerts because we built up the trust there. That's why it's quite an exciting time to sort of get involved with Cheltenham, because I've spent the last few years, four or five years, learning how to program and build up a series of concerts where people start to trust you for having quality artists and quality kind of concert experience and all that kind of thing. So it's very much the same general approach. And I think the other thing is that people always want to experience world-class classical music because it connects with people in myriad different ways. And so I think if you kind of focus on quality, you actually don't need to worry too much about, you know, how people see things and kind of overthinking kind of image problems.
Will there be collaboration with visual arts or technology in any of your programs?
This year, it's the first year I've done the festival, and so I'm really focused on just doing really wonderful concerts that are just music. But I've been involved in lots of things before that explored interdisciplinary work, so with dancers, with filmmakers. I've even done a concert with a kind of art pole dancer for something where this amazing athlete kind of performed a whole choreographed routine in sync with a composition by a Ukrainian composer, and it was an amazing concert. So I'm definitely open to left field ideas, but no, this year actually we're just focused on the art form of music.
Right, doing it the way it's been done for a while. Let's talk about some of the monumental pieces that were performed in the first few years of the festival. Some of them were actually premieres. I think you're programming some of those pieces at the end of the festival, is that right?
One of the things the festival has always been famous for is bringing in big international composers to get them to write kind of really, really forward-looking and risky works that might not have been programmed elsewhere. And one of those was the 4C interludes from Peter Grimes, which Benjamin Britten conducted at the first ever concert the festival ever hosted in 1945.
That right there just amazes me. I mean, I think that is, you know, what will bring in your crowds. But go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people in the town quite rightly are proud of the fact that this kind of legendary masterpiece had its first outing in our town hall. There are many other pieces that are sort of either lesser or better known that really are masterpieces that were commissioned by the festival throughout the second half of the 20th century and over the last 20 years too.
The Arnold Fifth Symphony, are you doing that one?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that piece is such an underrated masterpiece. I think it's an incredible work. There's so much variety of feeling and all these different orchestral colours. I mean, they just don't sound like any other piece. It's an amazing, amazing work. I would encourage anyone that hasn't listened to that symphony to go and explore it. It's got kind of aspects of bossa nova jazz, quite kind of dark, modernist sounding, experimental sounds too. It's got a kind of clash between military, kind of war-inspired darkness, with a lot of kind of levity and jokes in it and stuff. It's a really interesting piece.
That will be on July 12th, is that right?
July 12th, yeah, the end of the festival, the finale with the BBC festival. National Orchestra of Wales, yeah.
So I think you're also going to be doing the Enigma variations, is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, from the beginning, the festival's programming, I think, was inspired by how the proms are organised, which is that they always try and put something really famous in the second half or at some point in the programme in order to bring in the crowds to then show them how interesting some of the new music that's being written can be. So, for instance, you know, the Enigma Variations was in that first concert with Britten conducting, and in the first half there was a kind of array of new works that were kind of at the forefront of the time. So, yeah, so we're kind of recreating that a bit and kind of celebrating that 80 years on.
It's the 150th birthday of Gustav Holst, and he was actually born in Cheltenham. His house is a museum. Are you playing the Planets this year?
So we celebrated his birthday. I can't actually remember exactly when his birthday falls, but we celebrated it in last year's festival, and we did do a big Holst 150th. There was a big concert of his music. There was also an opportunity to walk through the commute that he must have done from his house to a church where he was director of music and played the organ, and you could go and experience different works of his along that route, including a performance in his house. So we really celebrate that connection there. Audiences in Cheltenham love Holst, and I think whenever we put that on, it really feels like a kind of big town party.
That's amazing. The festival plans to impact 80,000 young audience members in outreach and educational efforts. And this is something in my own heart, bringing in new audience members into the tribe. Talk a bit about how you plan to meet so many new listeners through these programs.
Cheltenham Festival's organisation is a huge cultural force in the area. There's an incredibly passionate and hardworking team that work to reach as many children as possible and give them the opportunity to both experience culture as a listener, but also to get involved in music and experiment with getting into playing music. There's concerts for schools with top-level performers. There are interactive concerts. There are education schemes year-round that lead up to the festival. There are relaxed concerts for families where there might be a member of the family that wouldn't be comfortable in a normal concert space. There are all sorts of different things on offer. So the other thing is that we really develop the young talent where people are starting to get into music. For instance, people who've won their local school competition and they are looking for what the next step is to link them up towards a career in music. We try and platform those people and give them a shot in the festival so that they can build up their experience and connect with other people who are doing similar stuff with their time at school,
right,
and hopefully go on to study further. One of our flagship programs that we run is this thing called Composer Academy. It's an amazing thing that started about 10 or 11 years ago now, where we offer a kind of intensive course for young composers, mainly people between about 18 and 25, something like that, where we give them a lot of time with a top flight ensemble and often with a conductor as well of that ensemble. So it might be a small orchestra, a string quartet, or a kind of vocal ensemble. It could be all sorts of things.
I know there's a lot of focus on British composers. So these kids or these young composers, is it more British or is it open to anyone over 18?
We do get applications from all over the world. Obviously, the large majority are from England and Britain, where the festival is better known. But increasingly, applicants come from all over the world. Often it's people who have a connection to the country, so people who might be studying here already or for some reason are in England anyway. But yeah, no, it's meant to reach the broadest possible audience. I mean, I do think it's a really amazing opportunity for those people. And now that we're 10, 11 years into the programme, we know that a lot of those composers have gone on to great success with commissions by the LSO and all that kind of thing. So people have really gone to make their mark in the industry. So it's an exciting thing to watch and to hear these compositions and know that these people are probably going to be, you know, really making a mark on the music we hear in the years to come.
Yes, sounds like a wonderful program. You've had a lot of success utilizing interesting venues and unique places that help the audience feel more connected, help them to relax and enjoy the concert more, and maybe bringing a higher awareness to the music itself. So what are your dreams in terms of venues in Cheltenham? I mean, they already have some great places that are unique. Are you going to be doing any outdoor, you know, pop-up concerts, things on the Village Green? You're talking about people seeing concerts on their way to Gustav Holst's house, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a never-ending range of possibilities, what could become a venue and that kind of thing. So there's a fringe festival that surrounds the main festival called Around Town, where young chamber musicians and soloists play in cafes and bars and cellars of pubs and that kind of thing all around town during the festivals. There's also loads of cool venues that we're experimenting with at the moment. There's an incredible brewery which make delicious beer called Dea in Cheltenham, and we're taking a couple of concerts there this year. The town is very lucky because it's got this very grand town hall in the middle which fits about 1,000 people and has beautiful acoustics for an orchestra or something like that. It has the Pitfield Pump Room, which fits about 300 or 400 people, and that is fantastic acoustic for chamber music. So we have small baroque orchestras or string quartets, that kind of thing there, and that's an amazing venue. We do concerts in the morning there, which is a really rare thing. So 11 a.m. late morning, civilized, have your breakfast, then come over and people can hear world-class music before lunch. And then also we're going out into town and finding these other spaces where you might not expect classical music to happen. Occasionally we do a free music stage that happens in the middle of town, and each year there's something a bit different, so we never really settle on one way of presenting it. It's always a bit different each year. This year we're focusing on this brewery called Dea for some of these concerts, which will be fun.
Do you know the dates off the top of your head for the brewery concerts?
Yes, the concert at the brewery, there's 2 days in a row. So there's one on the 10th, Thursday the 10th of July. That's with Seku Keita, who's an incredible kora player from Senegal. Wonderful musician. Don't even know about the kora, but it's this huge harp instrument made of a gourd. And then on the Friday, we have a concert of all the showcase of all the compositions written by the composers and Composer Academy. So they get performed in the brewery live to an audience at the end of their week of being workshopped. It's quite cool for those composers to be there in the room, surrounded by audience members listening to what they've written.
That's wonderful. What are the obstacles you're already getting ahead of? And what are your biggest challenges being the new director this year?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think it's never without an element of risk putting on any concert in classical music, especially when you're focused on bringing in world-class music for a local audience and making sure that the tickets are affordable. So my challenge is to kind of maintain that balance, really, between interesting concerts, popular concerts, affordable tickets, a great experience for everyone, and try and find the right balance between those things, have a successful festival that grows year on year. But I'd also say that in the past year, a massive uptick in sales, and so actually that gives us a lot more artistic scope for next year. You know, the more people that come to our concerts, the more we can take risks with what we do each year. So it's quite a fun little game to be playing, actually.
It's really fun to hear you talk about it this way, because, you know, to sit in your shoes, it is about risk. And the audience doesn't think about that, really. You know, they don't think about all the risks that you take.
If you go to a concert and it's fairly full. Only a weirdo like me would be sitting there thinking, I wonder how they're covering their costs here or whatever, or how much is the fee for that person. The arts are always financially delicate, and so you have to keep an eye on that kind of thing and think about how you're going to justify it. But the other thing is, sometimes you just need to take a risk on projects you think are really interesting, or programs you think are really interesting, or artists that are really good, regardless of what they're going to cost or what the kind of financial implications might be. You need to sort of manage to keep both minds going at the same time, the sort of creative and the commercial one, without letting one dominate the other.
Has there ever been a project that you just loved and maybe other people thought it failed, but it still stays in your heart as a great success?
Ooh. Do you know what? Sometimes there's been things where I have passionately advocated for and worked with a team of people to deliver a concert with someone we think is great, and that actually the artist involved is maybe not quite as established as, or doesn't quite have that connection with the audience yet because they're too young or something, and so you struggle to get people to come. But I've never regretted it, because I think everyone who was there, and luckily I've never had something where no one comes, but say you do a venue where you hope that 500 people might come and actually 150 or 200 people come and it's not quite what you were hoping for. The thing is, often those concerts are just so special that you leave thinking that you'd probably do it all over again if you had the choice, because it was so great. Also, I'd probably say that in general, people can tell when something special has happened, and that even though there weren't many people there, that they were lucky to be in the room because of how special what happened on stage was. Usually I'm there with other people thinking, you know, as a group, we all think this was really special. It's a shame that at this stage it was not more popular, but now I need to go away and have a think about how to spread the good word about this artist or this program.
Exactly. And you start to think, how could I have, or in the future, how would I do it better? You know, doing what you do is very special. And I think a lot of people would like to learn your secrets. So it has been really a pleasure talking with you. I hope I find myself in Cheltenham someday.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to come. If anyone's thinking of a holiday, you know where we are. Or maybe you don't, but look it up. It's lovely to speak. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
Thanks, Jack. With such a rich history of music, a visit to Cheltenham for a weekend or even a day would be an inspiring getaway. Check the show notes for more information, or go to cheltenhamfestivals.org for concert listings and more. Right now, you're listening to the Gloucester Youth Orchestra performing Holst's Jupiter from the Planets at the Cheltenham Music Festival. Wherever your travels take you, I hope you have a summer filled with lots of live music. Find events in your own community and support the organizations that bring music to us. Share this episode with anyone you think would enjoy it. And consider subscribing to Accelerando on Apple Podcasts and elsewhere. If you have questions, comments, or concerns, you can send an email to accelerandocast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye now.